Today is November 2nd, 2007. Almost exactly 5 years. 5 years and 3 months since Allison Swan was last here. My name is Michael Rodriguez, and I'm here to interview Allison Swan for the Michigan Writers Series. We usually have these, at least I do have these set sort of questions because it's called the Michigan Writers Series, so I always ask about Michigan. You know, there's obvious material here.
Right.
And one of the questions I always ask, too, is about teaching. Most of the people that we have come through here are teachers as a vocation, as a career. Now, you do teaching, but this isn't really your career, necessarily.
No, I've been... The way that I often describe it is I've had a lot of different jobs.
Right. Yeah.
And I always saw myself as a writer first and a teacher second. I have taught writing in a lot of different capacities on and off for my whole adult life.
Right.
Most recently, what I do is teach at workshops, conferences, and I work with adult writers one-on-one, kind of as a coach, tutor.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy that. Yeah. Especially now that I have a child, teaching in a classroom situation is absolutely fabulous on a part-time basis. But to get any writing done would be... A lot of people do it. For some reason, it doesn't work for me. I think it's because I need lots of time in the woods. And you don't really teach in the woods.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's many ways to sort of go about a career in teaching, and I put career in parentheses or in quotations. So you're not interested in a faculty job anywhere, but you're interested in teaching. Teaching as mentoring or tutoring or something.
You
like
know,
that.
I actually to hear you say it that way, I have to quickly say, oh well, if the right situation presented itself, I would definitely be interested. You know, I got my start teaching high school English, which is, for a writer...
You have an education
almost
degree?
Almost like boot camp. I got my undergraduate degree in English, then I stayed for another year and earned my teaching certificate, which was a great... I would recommend that to anyone who wants to teach high school at a secondary level, because I was able to take a lot of literature classes. And then the education classes I kind of just did quickly at the end, which worked well because it was right before I taught.
Right. And you actually did work as a teacher for a while.
I did. I taught gifted English in Coral Springs, Florida for 2 years and loved it, but did not so much like South Florida. And then my path just took me in another direction.
I read either on the bio that's for the Michigan Writers Series or somewhere else, that you owned, do you still own the bookstore?
No.
Okay, you did own a bookstore in where was it?
Saugatuck.
In Saugatuck, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you no more.
No. No.
But you've just moved back to Saugatuck as well.
Right.
From where?
Chelsea.
From Chelsea, that's right. Well, that's a different conversation. These people don't know that. why have we gone back to Saugatuck? Just to be close to the...
It's home. Yeah. I think neither... Neither my husband nor I are from there, but we had our daughter while we lived there. And I think a lot of the reason it feels like home is because of the lake. But I kind of just describe the Great Lakes Basin as my home. I'm having a hard time narrowing it down to one specific place. My mom's from the UP, my dad's from Detroit. I have for generations, so I have deep roots in two really far-flung parts of the state.
Do you go to the UP still?
Every year.
Yeah. Where do you go?
Go back to the same lake that I write about in The Kettle.
Uh-huh.
We found another place to stay that's a few doors down. Yeah. And my brother and I go back with our families.
So, and you mentioned earlier the woods. You want to be in the woods. Now, this is leading into the question about Michigan. So, you know, the idea of... what is it about this state? And the woods and the water are two radically different things, but obviously there's a lot of both in this state.
Right.
So why the, maybe this is a dumb question, but why the water? Why is that, why is, you know, all these people, why do all these people in fresh water find it so intriguing?
I think that one of the reasons fresh water makes for such compelling reading is that there is no answer to that question. But one of the reasons I wanted to do the book is because I'm so interested in that question.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about the book for a second. How did this come about? How were you approached by the press, or was this your idea from the start?
This was my idea. Yeah. It's a really long story how it came about, and the short answer is probably...
We can always edit it.
The short answer is probably that I... my daughter was a baby. She's now 8. So that's when the idea was hatched. This is how I keep track of how long it's been. Mm-hmm. I was in a bookstore in Seattle. The manager of L.A. Bay Book Company, whom I've known for a long time, put a book into my hands and said, "Allison, you're going to like this." And it was a book about that collected the writings of women about the Colorado River. Mm-hmm. And I thought, we need something like this about the Great Lakes. And what I meant by we need is... okay, here's this big, beautiful book about the Colorado River, which, you know, is facing all sorts of environmental challenges. And as far as I knew, there was nothing similar about the Great Lakes. There's the Women's Great Lakes Reader, which is a fabulous collection, but it's a different kind of book. Mm-hmm. So I started researching the idea. One thing led to another. And it really, this book really was a labor of love. Right. And the farther along I got in the process, the more... enthusiastic I became about it, because I encountered so many women writers who shared my passion.
Did you, how far into the project did you actually have a publisher for it? Did you know it was going to be published and there was a deadline and all that kind of stuff?
That's a really great question. No one's ever asked me that. Mm-hmm. I wrote a book proposal, which is an arduous undertaking. But very useful because it makes you really think about what you're doing. And I started soliciting work. There was an open invitation to anyone who wanted to submit, but I started approaching writers who I know who I thought might share work. And so I had a number, I can't remember how many, I had a number of pieces that people had given me and the proposal, and then I found a publisher. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hadn't started shaping a book.
Right.
And I had a publisher before I started doing that. Right. And then, of course, once I had a publisher, it gave me a lot more credibility, you know, to write to people like Alice Munro, who actually called and left a message on my answering machine. that was one of the thrills for me. Right. And then another one was, she's actually in the collection, Jane Urquhart, the Canadian novelist. Was not only sent work, but was really enthusiastic, and we immediately struck up a casual email conversation, and she's one of my literary heroes. Mm-hmm. So
I didn't think of it that much. How many Canadian writers are in there?
There are...
I mean, you don't have to say exactly. I'll put you on the spot.
Not very many.
Yeah.
I tried hard, but my connections are not in that part of the world. Alida Karstad is Canadian, and she wrote about the North Shore of Lake Ontario.
Right. A lot of us don't think of Lake Ontario that live in Michigan. We don't consider Lake Ontario as a great lake. So it's over there. You know, that's like this going out east. So on the way to New York or Toronto, you see this other lake, but it's not, you know.
Well, I was very aware of my lack of knowledge of Lake Ontario during this project, and I learned some things.
Yeah. You know, and there's nobody, I mean, I just flew in from the East Coast, and we went straight down Lake Huron, you know, so it sort of flew north and then went straight down to fly into Metro Airport. And it's just, I mean, there's nobody that lives on the Canadian side of the northern part of, you know, all the way up. There's how many writers could there be that are writing about, you know, living on the Great Lakes, in that part of the Great Lakes anyway? Obviously, Ontario, there's a lot of people.
Interestingly enough, and this is a pitch to writers who are listening, please, you know, listen. Yeah. It was hard for me to find writing about Lake Superior.
Right.
And that's, excuse me, but that's just crazy. I mean, that is a spectacularly inspiring body of water and shoreline. And I think you're exactly right. I think it's just the lack of population density. I think it's really as simple as that.
Well, there are several colleges that are on Lake Superior
as
well.
I contacted them.
Nothing, huh?
No, not nothing. But not as much as I would have thought. Definitely not as much as I would have thought.
Well, it's a great book, and it was very deserving of the award.
Thank you.
It's not really an award.
Thank you.
Michigan Notable. Yeah, I guess it is an award.
Thank you, and I always feel like I can brag about this book a little bit because so much of the writing in it isn't mine, you know. I mean, it really, the award went to a lot of people. It was a group effort.
And as part of the Notables, you take this on the road. You do a lot of events. So how did all that go?
Yeah, that was a blast. Yeah. And I think whatever cuts need to happen in the state, that program is not one of them that should go. And here's why. At every library that I went to, and I went to libraries in small towns authors don't go to those towns.
Right. That's what the program is really about, too.
And people who came to hear me read and talk about the book were so passionate about the Great Lakes, about books. We shared stories with each other. Our Great Lakes stories are we commiserated about why aren't there more books about this part of the world, and people just don't get it. And old people, young people, it was really quite something.
And you brought it was you always when you did these readings,
right?
But you had various other people from the book with you at different times, or did you
And
not?
It was just me.
It was just you.
It was just me.
Oh.
I called upon the author so often to do readings when the book first came out that I reached a point where I didn't do an event. I think I did one event that was close to any contributor, and she was out of town.
So what did you do at the events then? Did you read just your piece? Did you read other of your pieces that are not in here?
No, it was definitely a freshwater event. And what I did, I thought hard about how to handle this. And what I ended up doing was I put together a reading of excerpts from the book. And I started with Judith Minty's piece called Homes. Mm. And what I would do before I read it is I would tell a little bit about the author. I would read it. Sometimes I would stop in the middle of reading and just comment on how this was so emblematic of that writer's work, and or tell some fun story about working with them. Because you can imagine over the years that it took to put the book together, some great relationships sprung up. And then the groups were always of such a size. I think the biggest group was 20, 25 people. It was always manageable enough for casual conversation, interruption, question. So that's the way it would unfold.
Excellent. So what are you working on now? I don't have a watch.
I don't either. I don't either.
What's going on? What is going on since Freshwater?
Oh, that's also a hard answer. Would be a longer answer than you want to hear. How much time do we have?
No. Absolutely. We got time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. When I first finished it, I was completely burned out. Yeah. It was a draining, wonderfully draining.
Was there a lot of actual editing to do?
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of collaboration went on. And I discovered something about myself that didn't necessarily surprise me, because I've taught writing for years, creative writing for years. Mm. And I've worked with creative writers in intense workshop, one-on-one situations, both. But I kept pushing all the pieces as long as the authors would tolerate it. Yeah. And it was great. And I think it's made for a better book. Mm. So that was going on. Another thing that was going on that you wouldn't know from looking at the book is a number of the pieces that we had to cut because of length restrictions have won prizes in contests.
Interesting.
Yes.
Can I stop you? Why was there a length restriction?
I don't know.
Oh, but there was with the press.
One materialized late in the process.
Okay. We don't want to go there.
Yeah, and it's...
That's fine.
I'm the editor. It's not my area of expertise.
Yeah.
But so then, so I was burned out. So, but now that, so that was July of 06. So really it's only what, a year and a few months later. And I'm writing again. I think when I was here before, I was talking about a collection of essays about the Upper Peninsula. And I have now accumulated a number of essays about the Upper Peninsula, and I'm kind of heading in that direction, although I think, writing more essays about the Great Lakes Basin, personal essays. Mm. But I've also been writing poems again, kind of, which thrills me because they're kind of just, they're just happening in the way that you want poems to.
Excellent. So most of your success has been as a creative nonfiction writer.
Yes.
Though, right?
Yes.
So, but you're still doing the poetry.
Well, it would be more that I'm doing the poetry again after about 10 years of writing creative nonfiction. Yeah. And the way I was describing it to someone the other day is I think I had some stories I wanted to tell, and I think I might have more stories I want to tell that don't lend themselves to poems, and that's part of what might have led me off in the creative nonfiction direction. But I'm also really interested in the place where those two genres bump up against each other.
They have a lot in common, don't they?
And some of the epigraphs in this book were lineated poems that have had their lineation removed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Excellent. Anything else? What are you doing tonight?
What am I doing tonight? Yeah. You know, I guess it might be interesting to people who are listening. It's such a thrill for me to be. Is it our time? Such a thrill for me to be on this campus.
We'll pay no attention to
that. And I haven't thought about this in years. When I was an undergrad here in the early 80s, my fantasy, after I met Diane Wachowski and took a class with her, then my fantasy quickly became the corner office in Morrill Hall with a full stereo system. Yeah. And that was my, and I think it might be the full stereo system that might be part of the reason why I've ended up not in an office in a place like Morrill Hall. But I have discovered an organization called the ASLE, which I would like to mention. It's the Association for the Study of Literature and Environment. And it's an academic organization that kind of gives me a place where my need to be in the woods is legit. It's really quite wonderful.
Excellent. By the way, a lot of people that have offices in Morrill Hall, they think it's kind of run down.
Yes, I know.
It's not the cream of the crop to everyone that's there. But, well, thanks a lot. Look forward to the reading.
Thank you so much.